Hello, good evening, and welcome to News Night. The news is live on Joy 99.7 FM in Accra, Love 99.5 FM in Kumasi, and on over 30 affiliates across the country. Well, coming up tonight, Foreign Affairs Minister Samuel Okudzeto-Ablakwa sets record straight in controversial reports suggesting that Ghana compromised its stance on a crucial UN vote on anti-LGBTQ. We have more as the minister is also facing criticisms by the minority for allegedly lacking tact and mishandling foreign relations.
The minister's decision had cost Ghana over $38,200 in expedite services fees, and how affected citizens will be compensated. It's a compensation that we are mostly interested in.
Well, details as they make a new a number of demands, including a policy paper on what is informing Ghana's diplomatic missions on Western Sahara. Coming up in business.
Former Managing Director of Carl Bank Frank Edu Jr. chairs reconstituted board of National Investment Bank.
And in sports, Premier League side Tottenham Hotspur agree £55 million deal with West Ham United for Ghanaian forward Mohamed Kudus.
And a bit later, National Cathedral's Board of Directors firmly rejects proposal to transform the project into a cultural convention centre, reaffirming its original purpose. We'll speak to the Executive Director of the National Cathedral of Ghana. We have the latest of these and many other stories coming up tonight. My name is Kenneth Jesse. Don't go anywhere. Hello again. You can join the conversation on our WhatsApp platform. It's 055-1111-997. This is where we begin, as the Foreign Affairs Minister Samuel Okudzeto-Ablakwa has denied reports that Ghana compromised its stance on LGBTQ issues, citing misleading media coverage. Well, according to Okudzeto-Ablakwa, Ghana's abstention from a UN Human Rights Council vote was misinterpreted. He clarified that the motion was about extending the mandate of experts, not human rights. Mr. Ablakwa emphasized that President Mahama's administration will not deviate from Ghanaian cultural values. Let's first hear the minority in parliament demanding answers from the minister over the abstention, which sparked a heated debate. Patrick Boma is MP for Okaigwe Central.
We were promised as a country by the government of the day that they were not going to support that activity. So we expected that Ghana should have taken a firm position on that. And I was a bit surprised to have seen that Ghana abstained. So we'll be asking the Minister of Foreign Affairs and representatives of government as to why Ghana abstained. I intend filing a question to understand the basis of the abstinence. Thank you.
There are those who say that Ghana has always been non-aligned with some of those stances. Maybe it was just diplomacy at play and Ghana just did not want to play out its cards. What do you make of that?
Oh, we've been non-aligned on particular foreign policy matters. This is not a foreign policy matter. This is a cultural issue, value issue, constitutional issue, things that are alien to our culture and our well-being. And if you read our constitution, our cultural values are part of our constitutional establishment or provisions. So we thought the government, having been very firm, loud during the campaigns, ought to have sent the right message to Ghanaians that yes, we campaign that we're not going to accept those tendencies. And that when we get the opportunity to be in government, we are going to ensure. So it was a clear opportunity for government to demonstrate to the world her position on this very important matter.
So that was the MP for Okaigwe Central, Patrick Boama. Meanwhile, speaking at a brief commissioning ceremony for Ghana's new representatives for UNESCO, Foreign Affairs Minister Samuel Okudzeto-Ablakwa said President Mahama will not support values that are alien to Ghanaian culture.
Human rights. And we have made it very clear that President Mahama, this government, and indeed the Ghanaian society, the larger Ghanaian society, is vehemently opposed to LGBTQI. So there is no way our envoys in Geneva will vote to support LGBTQI. The vote was about the independent experts' mandate in terms of violence against women and violence against people of various sexual orientation. And we do know that as a country, in as much as we are opposed to LGBTQI, we are against any forms of violence against them. We respect everybody's human rights. So even in the private members' bill that we all supported in Parliament, in the last Parliament, the 8th Parliament, it was clear that we show empathy to anybody we identify in Ghana to be practicing LGBTQI. In that private members' bill, nobody had the right to assault or attack or harm or maim or kill anybody identified in Ghana to be practicing LGBTQI. That will have meant that proposed legislation is inconsistent with our constitution, because our constitution, as you do know, has very entrenched human rights provisions which protects and guarantees the rights and freedoms of everybody. So misleading reports of that nature should be discarded, and I would urge the media to independently obtain what the vote was about at yesterday's Human Rights Council meeting. There was no vote on support for LGBTQI, no vote. The ministry is issuing a statement, and we shall be quoting copiously, very clear terms, the exact question as was put at the meeting, so that you can also independently verify. And it is clear that there was no vote on support for LGBTQI, whether you are for LGBTQI or you are against. If that was the vote, you can be assured that Ghana will have voted clearly against, because that is our position. We do not support that practice. And President Mahama has made it very clear that it will not be on his watch that he will support or his government will endorse LGBTQI. He's made that very clear.
Right, let's bring in the Member of Parliament for Asin South, Reverend John Intim Fojo, for more on this. Thank you very much for your time, Reverend. You've heard the Foreign Affairs Minister say that it wasn't an abstention vote on LGBT rights. Do you have any evidence contrary to what the Minister said?
Well, thanks for having me, Ken. The Minister has been disingenuous. The matter of the resolution that was passed, which vote was taken at UN Human Rights Council, it's not as simplistic as he put it. He should have been very truthful to say that the resolution specifically had to do with renewing the mandate of the independent expert on the promotion of human rights on LGBT activists and practitioners. And which mandate, when you look at a four-page document detailing the decisions that they took, among the mandates of the independent experts is to tour around the world, visit member countries, establish cooperation with their governments, obtain information and access to groups, and the promotion of LGBT rights. And in much the same way, to activate financing support from the United Nations in support of countries who cooperated with the independent aspect, among other things. And so if you're a country where 275 members of parliament had taken a decision determining the practices and promotion of LGBT as repugnant to our values, a country where, with the outcome of the CDD 2021 survey, determining that 93% of our population find the practices of LGBT as abomination, with our constitution expressly stating so, and having gone around the country and campaigned and received the sentiments of our people, both young and old, from various shades of religion and creed, and having made firm promises that you will uphold the values and aspirations of our people, overwhelming majority of our people, in line with preserving our family values. You don't go to UN Human Rights Council to abstain from such a sensitive vote.
Right.
For the matter, as a matter of record, China voted no. Ivory Coast voted no. Ethiopia voted no. The Gambia voted no. Qatar voted no. So all these countries, Malawi voted no. In all these respected countries who voted no, point to me one of them in which you find brutalities against LGBT practitioners as daily occurrence.
Reverend Itimfojo, we all know that these LGBT issues predate the Foreign Affairs Minister Samuel Okudjo-Tabblakwa. How would an MPP government have voted?
So if you're saying it predates the Honorable Okudjo-Tabblakwa, who is the Foreign Affairs Minister as we speak? We are discussing a decision that has been taken in 2025.
Mm. So how would an MPP government have voted?
Because whatever occurrences in the past, nonetheless, the people give various considerations and determine that this party and this government should be in power.
Mm.
They are the ones that these questions should be asked. And then I'm submitting to you that all the countries who voted yes, France, Netherlands, South Africa, UK, Germany, they were all countries who have legitimized LGBT rights.
Right.
And in those, and we have a common convention that says silence means consent. In a country where everybody is loud about our position on LGBT, you don't go abstaining on LGBT votes.
Mm, Reverend, I'm saying that it predates him because this has been an issue that even a bill was signed in Parliament and President Akufo-Addo did not assent to it. So many are wondering why the sudden shift of the opposition MPP. That's why I'm asking that a current MPP
number
government,
one,
what would you have
one,
done?
Let me put on record. You are aware. The first member of parliament to have raised a statement in parliament on the issue of LGBT, myself. And when this matter of human social rights, private members, bill came in, I was very instrumental in it. My government was in power. Whenever, you know, some embassies overstepped and were emboldening LGBT groups and certain resource centers, we were quick to bring the attention of the media and national security. You assisted, we raided and stopped those operations and those activism. Now, when the bill was passed, even whilst we were in the passage processes, you are witness to all the plethora of legal challenges that certain individuals and CSOs filed. None of them was a member of MPP. When the final determination of the suit that was challenging the transmittance of the bill from Parliament to the President for assenting, it was December 18th. You have it as a matter of record. And so when the bill was passed, you have it on your record, on your show. You captured it, your correspondence captured it. I was one of the very first who urged the president on the day, President Akufo-Addo, to assent to the bill. So our position on this has been consistent.
Mm.
And the circumstances leading to it not being assented to is a matter of public record. And you, as a media, are the first people come to set the record straight. And so if someone campaigns around the nation that I will come and sign the bill, I will assent it to it without hesitation, and it comes to power, and later changes the narrative to say curriculum should cure LGBT matters, another time says I will even bring a state-sponsored bill.
Mm.
7 months old. Many bills have come. It's not passed. And the same human social rights, family values bill, has been reintroduced for 4 months in Parliament. Speaker of Parliament has approved it for 4 months. A simple act of transmitting it for gazetting has stayed for 4 months just because some unseen hand from Jubilee House is controlling the movement of the proposed bill from getting gazetted. And then subsequent to that, we see antecedents of gay couple who come boldly to the country, kiss and desecrate our independent monument, campaign for LGBT rights, and campaign ahead of a notable milestone UN Human Rights Council decision.
If I may come in here, so is that to say that this vote that we absented from, although Okudjeto has clarified that it wasn't on LGBTQ rights, but do you seem to suggest that this seems to show that even if that bill is eventually presented before Parliament, the President will not assent to it, the anti-LGBTQ bill?
No, I leave that to the determination of the President. But you see, you must obtain a copy of the resolution. Read it, and for the benefit of your listeners, because I have read it, and everything about it is on independent experts on LGBT, whose mandate is to go around countries promoting the rights of LGBT, lobbying, activating financial mechanism support for countries, those who cooperate with them. And I'm telling you, you know the activism of LGBT and the mechanisms they use around the world, the promotion, the activism, the sinister agenda. Everybody knows about it. And so you don't say that for the fact that it wasn't a simple question as many that are against LGBT say no, or as many that are for say yes. No. And there's a reason why Ivory Coast voted no.
Yes.
There's a reason why Ethiopia, the headquarters of AU, voted no. There's a reason why China voted no.
Okay.
There's a reason Malawi voted no. So get to the bottom of it and read the full resolution, and you will come to understand that it's not as simplistic as the government wants to mislead the country.
Okay.
So a complete reneging
right.
on their position, and they have misrepresented the position of Ghana on LGBT matters.
Okay. Reverend John Intimfojo is the MP for Asin South. Thank you for your time this evening. Let's still stay in the House, because the minority in Parliament is grilling Foreign Affairs Minister Samuel Okudjeto Ablakwa over his handling of foreign relations, slamming him for lacking finesse. Well, they are also seeking compensation for those hit by the closure of the Washington consular office, adding fuel to the ongoing government opposition standoff. Well, first, let's listen to a deputy ranking member on the Foreign Affairs Committee, Nana Asafoje Aye.
Since Honorable Samuel Okudjeto Ablakwa assumed office on the 7th February 2025, the minority and Ghanaians globally have observed and witnessed a troubling drift away from the traditional area on mission. The first lap will be on the chip embedded passport program, an initiative fully conceived, contracted, and financed by the previous Akufo-Addo-led administration. The cabinet approved in August 2024. The outgoing government secured supplier credit, completed all testing, and formally launched the project on 2nd December 2024, when the new minister staged a costly relaunch on the 28th April 2025, an event that alone cost the taxpayer $1.2 million. It failed to increase printing capacity or paper supply. Within 8 weeks, the passport office was sitting on 32,467 unprinted applications. 68% of applicants had waited more than 8 weeks, despite paying for 15 days express service. You can also get this on the passport office situation report, 20th June 2025. Now, over 1.4 million times, this video I'm talking about was viewed over 1.4 million times, showing mothers missing scholarship deadlines and traders stranded without travel documents. The relaunch solved nothing. It's merely a rebranded work that has already been done and diverted scarce resources away from service delivery.
Let's talk to our resident parliamentary correspondent, Kwiku Asante, who is joining us on the telephone lines for more. Kwiku, they also talk about the closure of Ghana's embassy in the U.S. and hardship it occasioned for Ghanaians in America. Tell us more.
Well, yes, Ken, according to the deputy ranking member, there were so many persons who had their passports locked up at the embassy at the time the foreign minister ordered the closure, due to the alleged fraud perpetrated by staff at the embassy. They say it occasioned so much hardship for so many people, persons who were traveling for very important business and family social relation issues, all lost real money among others, for which reason they are demanding compensation for those persons.
By 26 May 2025, 2025, the embassy doors were closed and 437 confirmed applicants for the week had been cancelled. Among the stranded was Mrs. Ajua Mensima, whose plea for the return of her passport so she could bury her grandmother went viral within hours. The minister's decision had cost Ghana over $38,200 in expedite services fees and forced at least 112 travelers to miss their connecting flight. Stranded consular protocols calls that for sanitation of the front desk and continuous skeletal consular protocol calls. But the minister instead issued a spectacle of closure that punished the innocent and embarrassed the state without explanation. The mission reopened on the 30th of May 2025, and the matter has since been shrouded in silence. But the last time the minister appeared in parliament to recount the issue while he closed the embassy, the parliament, particularly minority, requested for the report. And up to now, the minister, if you recall, told the whole house that he would present the report just the next day. He told the speaker, until now, it's been weeks, we've not even seen the report.
Kweku, they also discuss some other issues and make several demands. Which are those?
Particularly relating to the very thorny matter of the Western Sahara, they claim that the government has been flip-flopping. They want a specific stance from government on that diplomatic issue, as well as a host of other demands that the deputy ranking member does make on the foreign minister and government in extension.
The public audit of passport programs, costs, supply chain, and backlog data within 14 days. Two, the consular report detailing who authorized the Washington shutdown and what legal basis and how affected citizens will be compensated. It's a compensation that we are mostly interested in. A policy paper laying out Ghana's current position on Western Sahara, including a diplomatic assessment that informed the Rabat community. And lastly, an emergency response framework, travel advice, hotlines, and evacuation protocol for Ghanaians in our neighboring states where conditions are uncertain, beginning with Togo. Parliament will be asking, as a matter of urgency, that the Minister for Foreign Affairs in the next sitting address these following matters. In the meantime, we call on all journalists, civil society groups, and every concerned Ghanaian to insist on transparency. Ghana's global standing is the product of decades of disciplined diplomacy, and no individual should be allowed to tarnish this hate or hubris that we have fought for.
Let's still stay on the telephone lines and speak to Nana Asafu Ejaya, who's the deputy ranking member on the Foreign Affairs Committee in Parliament. If you can hear me, thank you very much for your time. So, with a plethora of issues that you've outlined against the Foreign Affairs Minister, are you given any timelines for these issues to be addressed?
Okay, so some we have. Let me first and foremost thank you, and then appreciate your time and greet your listeners. So today we spoke to the media on how, and this one, we were clear about not really doing politics or scoring political points. But we are so much concerned about the imagery. In fact, the pedigree that Ghanaian foreign diplomacy have gotten to, which was worked towards for decades, president upon president, ministers upon ministers, have contributed so much into gaining or getting Ghana to that pedestal. And it is becoming so worrying when we see one individual trying for whatsoever reasons, for political stance, for propaganda purposes, for emotion, for whatever reason, bringing this imagery down. We are worried as a committee. So we raised these issues and then listed them. One among them, one among them was the Ghana and Morocco Sahrawi issue. Before Nana Addo-Dankwa-Akufo-Addo was leaving office, he was clear about Morocco being the sole owner of the disputed territory and stated that in 21st November, when he went to AUP's security conference,
and wrote to their respective countries. In fact, as at then, the current minister now was the ranking member for foreign affairs.
Okay.
He was all over the place, criticized this decision.
Mm.
In fact, hit up the president so hard and promised the Saharan Republic that he would ensure that their sovereignty is protected.
Nana, all these points that you make, you have elaborated further on them earlier in Parliament. So what do you want to be done? Are you calling for the sack of Ghana's top diplomat?
So we are asking that, as for sacking, it is in the bosom of the president. And we are fully aware that most of the decisions that have been taken by the top diplomat has full blessing of the president. And that is what makes it sad. Because he said the closure of the Washington embassy had the full blessing of the president. And I'm surprised that didn't happen. It is one of the single things that have put Ghana and U.S. relationship to what we have now. The plethora of issues that are happening as a result of this one.
So do you want him sacked?
No, the person who is doing the thing is supporting him. He's giving him the blessing. So how will he sack it?
Okay.
So he has a full power to the president. Who full power to the president? So if you want, it's like wanting the president to be sacked. And that can only happen in the next general elections. That is not what we are asking them. The minister comes down. The minister stops those headline chasing and seeking. Stop the propaganda. And calm heads must prevail. He must do a lot of consultation. He must do a lot of backdoor conversation.
Okay.
Because that is what diplomacy is about. Else, the entire Ghana, the entire population will be at risk. Those who are living here and those who are living in the diaspora.
Okay.
Because the decisions that are coming up as a result of some of these things will not only affect the people in Ghana, but affect the people in the diaspora.
Okay. Thank you very much. That's the deputy ranking member on the Foreign Affairs Committee of Parliament, Nana Asafu Ejayi. And it's now time for business. And George Wiafe, as always, is joining us with the latest. George, take us away.
Well, coming up in business, we'll be telling you more on the IMF cash, that is the $367 million that has hit Bank of Ghana's account. And former managing director of Cow Bank, Frank Edu, chairs reconstituted board, that is, of National Investment Bank. The business news on Newsnight is brought to you by MTN Business. Welcome to the new world of business. And thanks and President Hebal and Chako. Welcome back to Business on Newsnight. Now, the much talked about IMF cash of $367 million has finally hit Bank of Ghana's account. Joy Business understands the funds came in today. There is more in this report.
The amount, although marginal, may still go a long way to improve the Bank of Ghana's reserves. The April data released by the central bank showed that the country's international reserves was about $10.6 billion, representing 4.3 months of import cover. However, President John Mahama at a recent engagement with members of the Council of State revealed that Bank of Ghana's international reserves may have reached 6 months of import cover. For some, this could also help in stabilizing the cedi, as this may help in dealing with fears that the local currency's current performance is not sustainable. For the finance ministry, this may provide some fresh cash to finance some projects identified in the 2025 budget. This is because the Bank of Ghana will take the dollars and give the cedi equivalent to the finance minister, Dr. Atuforsen, to finance those critical projects in the budget.
And that is a business desk report. Now, in another story, former managing director of Cow Bank, Frank Edu Jr., has been appointed as the new chairman of the reconstituted board of the National Investment Bank. Mr. Edu was today sworn into office by the finance minister, Dr. Atuforsen, together with six other members. The finance minister promised that the bank will operate with the independence and professionalism that it deserves. Dr. Atuforsen also announced that government has recapitalized the bank to help it play its rightful role in the economy, a story that was done by Joy Business a few days ago. Now, another story. The Ministry of Energy has maintained that measures have been instituted to ensure a stable power supply this weekend. And this is despite the planned maintenance work by Italian oil firm Eni that is this Sunday. There is more in this report.
The Energy Minister John Jinapor at a program earlier this week revealed that there could be some challenges with power supply this Sunday. This is due to the maintenance works that will be carried out by Italian oil firm Eni. Joy Business is learning that Eni's gas supplied is already processed, so it sends it directly to the various power generating firms. But the Energy Ministry in a statement again argued that some of these proactive steps that they've taken will effectively ensure that there is stable power supply in the country. The ministry in the statement also announced that the maintenance works will go a long way to increase the national gas supply by some 30 million standard cubic feet per day. This will eventually push total supplies to 270 million meters standard cubic feet by day. This, the ministry says, is a key step in bolstering our energy infrastructure and ensure a reliable energy supply for the nation.
And that is a Business Dex report. Now, founder and senior partner at business law firm, that is ABN David Africa, David Fosidote, has linked the persistent high prices of goods in the country to the deeply rooted social mindset, which he describes as key driver of Ghana's inflation. Now, speaking at the 15th annual general meeting of the Ghana Association of Savings and Loans in Accra today, Dr. Fosidote called for prudent policy interventions to help deal with the situation.
I agree that monetary policy rates and the rest do affect inflation. But I do think that there are certain basic things about our behavior that affect inflation perhaps more than we need to look at. One example I always give is why second-hand cars, which are parked by the roadside and which have not been bought for 4 or 5 years in the rain, nobody reduces the price to sell. It is clearly a society whose psyche is such that we never reduce the price of anything. It doesn't matter whether it's being demanded or not. So a large part of our inflation is mindset.
Dr. David Fosidote is founder and senior partner at business law firm ABN David Africa. Now, total assets of the savings and loans company for last year grew by 30.6% from the 7.4 billion Ghana cedis to 9.6 billion Ghana cedis, ending December 2024. Now, global professional services firm EY Ghana has officially launched its 25th anniversary celebrations in Accra. The milestone marks a quarter of a century of providing distinguished financial services in the country. Emmanuel Adekolo is the country managing partner of EY Ghana.
Continue to drive transformation in our business. You know, tech, AI is the next thing that is happening, the sustainability. So what we've done is to build capacity to support businesses drive in that direction. Any business that is not moving with the pace of technological change, with the pace of sustainability requirement, is going to be left behind. So what we've done is we've built capacity within our firm, within our network firm, to be able to support businesses to deliver on these mandates going forward.
And of course, a series of activities have been lined up to engage clients, stakeholders, and community throughout the country when it comes to EY Ghana. Now, Trade, Agribusiness, and Industry Minister Elizabeth Fosidote has inaugurated boards of three separate institutions in the sector. Now, they are Ghana Export and Import Bank, that is Exim Bank, the Ghana Investment Promotion Center, and the Ghana Standards Authority. Now, the 10-member board of the Ghana Investment Promotion Center is chaired by the former local government ministry, that is Akwesi Oponfosu, one Dr. Joseph Nyakute, that is, will be the chairman of the Exim Bank, and Dr. that is Hudu Butari will be handling actually the Ghana Standards Authority. Now, inaugurating the board, the trade minister charged members of these three institutions to make the after relevant to Ghana.
We also want you to work very hard in the area of Africa Continental Free Trade Area because it's our best bet. We need to do a lot of standard harmonization because once we harmonize our standards with other countries, it makes the trading with those countries very easy under the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. So your task is enormous. But I'm sure that you are up to that task and you work to the satisfaction of the ministry, Ghanaians, and then the president who actually appointed you.
Trade, Agribusiness, and Industry Minister Elizabeth Ofosu-Ijari. And that's all for business on Newsnight. Back to you, Kenneth.
Well, thank you very much, George. Let's bring you some more stories this evening, as the National Cathedral's Board of Directors has strongly denied rumors of repurposing the project as a cultural convention center, stating they've received no formal notification, or they view such reports as a threat to the project's original intent, which is a sacred interdenominational space for national religious events. And my colleague Michael Ashale joins me in the studio with details of the statement, which was issued a while ago. Michael, what else does it say?
Well, the board insists that the site for the National Cathedral was gifted by the state to the National Cathedral of Ghana, incorporated as a company limited by guarantee, with a deed to the land transferred to the company. The suspension of construction was due, it says, largely to a lack of funds, as well as politicization and vilification of the project that affected fundraising. It continues to say that the National Cathedral is not an abandoned project. Currently, it says a pathway to the completion of the project through a process of depoliticization, statutory accountability, and the development of a state church society partnership to raise the needed financing is currently under discussion. The board says it remains fully committed to this process and to the completion of this critical infrastructure, which will serve as an interdenominational sacred space and a quote family house, a unifying platform for all Ghanaians of the Christian faith, as well as an interreligious space for the broader Ghanaian community. Ken.
Thank you very much, Michael. Let's do some sports now.
Let's go straight into the stories, and let's start with the Joy Sports Invitational scheduled for August 9 at the University of Ghana Stadium. And the 2024 edition may not have ended well for Piva Beverages, with silverware just out of reach. But the beverage giants is heading into this year's tournament with renewed focus and fierce determination. Speaking ahead of the event, Chief Executive Officer Frank A.J. Mensah issued a bold statement of intent, making it clear that his team means business in this year's edition.
I'll be among the finalists. I will take the cup. This time, I don't want to stick my neck out because of what happened last year. But I'm assuring that this year I'll do better than what I did last year. Joy last year gave us a big mileage, and I believe that this year, same. Piva, 1 year on, has been in almost every household now. We've covered all the 16 regions of Ghana. Apart from their sports, this is a good area for networking. So all the corporate Ghana, those who were not part of it, the MDAs, the private equity funding, the banks, this is the best opportunity for you to come and join. And let's network. For you know, you even have a contract there. And people who have no even jobs, you want to change jobs, it's an opportunity to meet the CEOs and talk to them. Who knows?
Yeah, the Chief Executive Officer of Piva Beverages, Frank A.J. Mensah, speaking there to join the Joy Sports Invitational 2025. Call Sleven on 054-010-6466. To some transfer news, and Tottenham Hotspur have agreed a £55 million deal with West Ham to sign midfielder Mohamed Kudus. The Ghana international is now set to have a medical before signing a long-term contract. West Ham had rejected an initial £50 million deal earlier last week, but the deal has now been clinched. Kudus, who has an £85 million release clause, joined West Ham in a £38 million deal from Ajax back in 2023. He has made 65 Premier League appearances for West Ham, scoring 13 goals and providing 9 assists. That brings an end to sports. Back to you guys.
Thank you very much, Daniel. Let's bring you some of the messages you've been sharing with us. This is from Francis in Accra. He says the MPP wants the Foreign Affairs Minister to do backdoor talks and consultations so they can get sitting allowance when the LGBTQ bill was formulated. Was the MPP government and Akufo-Addo not in tune with what Ghanaians were saying? This is from Charles in Lagos, and he says, is it being said that if something untoward happens in our embassy in the US, the government of Ghana cannot close the embassy momentarily and the right thing be done? This is from Jones Tinkran. He says, the issue is neither here nor there. This is betrayal of the highest level. The NDC in opposition was overly vociferous and vocal about this LGBTQ plus issue. And the first sign of letdown is to abstain on a matter we were hitherto overly informed about. Anyway, this in no way gives the MPP the effrontery to chastise the current government, except that the credibility of the two parties is unarguably nauseating. This is from Musa Abatroy in Asuwase. He says the conduct of the MPP minority is making politics incredibly unattractive. Their behavior is becoming unbecoming of responsible opposition. And then this one says, seriously, what do these MPP MPs take Ghanaians for? They should stop insulting our intelligence. They did all they could to refuse signing the LGBTQ bill. And now they say what? That is from BB in North Kaneshi. And those are some of the messages that you have been sending to our WhatsApp platform, 055-1111-997. And let's continue with some more stories, because in Accra's cables and wireless area, plastic waste is a way of life. Here, men and women dig through what the city throws away. They collect, sort, crush, and sell it, turning trash into income. In our Climate Focus series today, MF Adati tells a story of how their work puts food on the table and keeps plastic off the streets.
In the cables and wireless area of Accra, a small but important recycling hub is giving plastic waste a second life. What others throw away, people here turn into income, and in doing so, they help the environment too.
This one will melt it, they will do take away, black polythene.
Interesting.
Al-Hassan is a local recycler. Every day, he collects plastics from across the city, crushes it into raw chips, and sells them to manufacturers.
Because of this job, my Pekin gets scholarship for outside. Because of this job, I built my own house, a wife with two kids.
Portia is one of the many women who sort plastics by hand. Nana Kofi Hinaku, who runs Star Plastics and Alinko, buys recycled plastics to produce household and construction items.
I have a lot. If I'm producing, I have sewa plate, I have sewa bowl, I have adoa, I have crystal dia, I have watch plate. I've named it in Ghanaian way, because I'm not going to do it some like the Chinese people, they'll write ching chong chong on it.
We have all the company who is doing this rubber bowl, rubber bucket, they are blacks. Take away all our people are doing it because of this job.
Plastic that once choked gutters and landfills is now raw materials for building, packaging and household essentials. Their effort may be small scale, but they are making a big difference in reducing pollution and protecting the environment. MFA Aditi's report for Joy News.
Climate Focus is brought to you by Joy News in partnership with Youth Bridge Foundation, Bridging Gaps for Positive Youth Development, and the Climate Development Knowledge Network.
Now, President John Mahama has tasked district assemblies to strictly enforce sanitation bylaws, particularly those targeting open defecation. Speaking at the launch of the 2025 Voluntary National Review of the UN Sustainable Goals, the president stressed buildings lacking proper sanitation facilities should not be granted permits.
It is unacceptable that in 2025, open defecation persists in parts of Ghana. This is not just a public health issue, it is a matter of dignity and equity. Our sanitation crisis is not caused by lack of knowledge, but by gaps in investment, enforcement, and community engagement. We must move decisively to eradicate this scourge. And when you talk of enforcement, all the district assemblies have in their bylaws that you can't get a building permit unless you provide sanitation and toilet facilities in the building. So how come people have to go out to, what do they call it, free range, you know? And the most disturbing thing is some people say they enjoy free range better because you get some air conditioning at your rear end, you know? And so the district assemblies must enforce their bylaws. Nobody should be able to build without sanitation facilities in the building.
Meanwhile, sanitation advocates who have welcomed this directive say a monitoring policy would aid the effective implementation of the directive. Listen to WASH technical specialist at World Vision Ghana, Yao Ataahi, who wants a desk set up to assess monitoring.
Many of the challenges we have
in the space of environmental sanitation have to do with behaviors. And once we are able to change our behaviors, we'll be able to address many of these challenges. And it comes with such directives. At least once it's coming from the president, you can be sure that many of them, even if not all of them, many of them will begin to act and act in ways that will address our sanitation challenges. So we are excited. Going forward, I think that civil society organizations should be interested and should be following up. I mean, all of us are going to ensure that we monitor these MMDAs to ensure they are able to comply. Apart from that, I think the presidency should also take in interest. There is one thing giving a directive and another getting the directive complied with. And so maybe there should be a desk, a monitoring and evaluation desk, which will ensure that on a regular basis, we are able to assess the progress being made and even publish them for all Ghanaians to see. And I'm also happy that the minister has hinted that he is going to introduce what he calls the league table, MMDA sanitation league table. And that way, we'll be able to know which MMDAs are doing well, and for those who are not doing well, what support can we provide them so they can also catch up. And so for me, these are exciting times. We just, hope that these will be complied with and that Ghana will become clean and safe again. To the assemblies, they have the overall development of their districts in their hands. Others can support, but the real responsibility lies with them. But I believe that having made it a key performance indicator, many of them, or all of them, will be interested in ensuring that their districts, their municipalities, and their metropolitan areas are clean.
So that is Yao Ata'ahi, who is the WASH Technical Specialist at World Vision Ghana. Let's also hear from Al-Hassan Yemisa Benduri, who is Monitoring and Evaluation Officer at the Upper East Regional Environmental Health and Sanitation Department, who wants sanctions applied to defaulting assemblies.
It was not implemented is the fact that there is no that effective monitoring mechanism to ensure that people who bring their permits to for approval comply. Now, it would have been very well implemented if the assemblies issue what we call a habitation certificate. The habitation certificate will be issued after an inspection is done to ensure that the facilities that are supposed to be there in the house are all present. For instance, the toilet facility, your bath, a kitchen, and other sanitation auxiliary facilities that are supposed to be available for effective and efficient habitation of human beings. But that is what is not always done when it comes to permit approval. So the good thing is that the sanitation management has been decentralized. And so they will have enough resources to empower the officer who are supposed to verify that this house has been built and they have all the facilities done. And the assemblies need to take an opportunity to include all this in their bylaws so that they can fix a fee on it. If you build a house without the toilet or without a toilet in the house, you can be charged. And that is also another way of generating internal revenue to the assembly.
In other stories tonight, limited access to comprehensive sexual health education has been identified as a key contributing factor to increasing rate of HIV infections in the country, particularly among young people. President Mahama has therefore advocated for the urgent need for a youth-led national conversation on HIV prevention. We'll hear from the president shortly, but first, let's take a look at the statistics. And my colleague Michael Ashali once again joins me in the studio with more. Michael, what are the current statistics regarding HIV infections in Ghana?
Kenneth, a 2024 report by the Ghana AIDS Commission revealed that 15,290 new HIV infections were recorded in that year alone. Of these, 4,732 cases involved individuals aged between 15 to 24.
Those are quite alarming figures. So how do these compare to previous years, for example?
Well, we know that there has been a gradual increase in the number of new HIV infections, particularly among key populations such as men who have sex with men and female sex workers, Ken.
Okay, and let's now bring you some NSMQ stories. And the race to the Central Regional NSMQ crown is already heating up with St. Augustine's College and Infanta Pim School already booking their spots in the finals, where two more schools are yet to join them as the battle for the remaining slots continue. And my colleague Adubia Asare is at the SGS Auditorium in the Central Region, where the third contest is currently underway. Adubia, tell us more.
Yes, Ken, the third contest of the day has just come to an end, and the euphoria here was immense. The organizers had to ask the students to go out. Ogasco secured the first spot for today, followed by Infantopim School. Now, the Infantopim School's contest was very, very hot because they had to go through a lot just to overthrow the reigning regional champions, Addis Adel College. And then the third slot has been occupied now by University Process Senior High. Tomorrow, we'll see Wesley Girls battling Swedro, Agri and Edinam Senior High before the final contest.
Adubia, sorry there. Thank you very much. That's it for News 9 tonight. My name is Kenneth Jesse. Thank you very much for listening. But up next is Strong and Sassy, and Akofa is here. Akofa, what are we discussing tonight?
So today, we are putting the spotlight on impact makers. We're basically celebrating them, and we're doing so or having that conversation with Portia Dunbar. She won, at the Just and the Joy News Impact Makers Awards. Mm. So yes, we'll be speaking to her, find out what motivates her, what keeps her going, some of the challenges she faced while embarking on this journey of hers, and then we'll get into some more details on that one.
She indeed deserves the spotlight. Absolutely. Take us away.